Hey, Charlie, I have a secret.
Shannon, we haven't even started the show yet. What are you doing?
I just wanted to let you know I've been cheating on the North Avenue Lounge.
This was inevitable, this kind of relationship. What have you been doing?
I've been making another podcast.
Nice.
But I thought maybe you, since you're such a radio guy, would want to learn about it.
I do like podcasts. I especially like podcasts that my friends do. Is it another chat show?
It's a storytelling show.
Okay, cool.
So maybe the folks who listen to North Avenue Lounge would like to learn about how you make a podcast and all the stories that are involved in this one.
I like it. What's it called?
It's called Hidden Voices.
Okay. We'll do like a two-parter. We'll do the show about it, right?
Uh-huh.
And then we'll actually like preview it on another episode.
Okay.
Does that sound good?
Let's dig in.
All right. Let me start up the music here. Today's North Avenue Lounge is the first of a two-parter called Hidden Voices. The Georgia Council on Developmental Disabilities is a federally funded independent state agency that promotes public policy to create an integrated community life for persons with developmental disabilities. The GCDD Storytelling Project has collected stories from and about Georgians with developmental disabilities, and Hidden Voices is a podcast they've created to explore the themes in those stories. We're going to talk about the GCDD Storytelling Project and the podcast in this first part, and next week, we'll preview the Hidden Voices podcast itself. That's all coming up on the North Avenue Lounge. My guest today is Shannon M. Turner, the founder and creative director for Story Muse, and also my co-host on the North Avenue Lounge. Hey, Shannon.
Hey, Charlie.
So you have brought a fresh project to the station today to talk about. You have been working with the GCDD Storytelling Project, and you're going to do something new with that. So tell me first, how did you get involved in the Storytelling Project?
Well, you may remember, I went out on my own about 3 years ago. I left being an arts administrator, or as our first guest together, Slash Coleman, used to call me an arts waitress. Like, hey, my name is Shannon. How may I serve your art today?
So harsh. So harsh.
And I finally embraced my full artist self. And that was sometime right after the election. I just decided I really needed to tell stories, to help people tell their stories. People needed to be encouraged to listen to each other and especially hear each other across lines of difference. So, for 3 years now, I've been going all over helping, you know, folks in a variety of capacities tell stories for personal and professional development. And so that has looked so different. I've worked with faculty members, with, girls who've been sex trafficked, with real estate agents. I mean, it's...
That's a very widespread you just laid down.
Yeah. I mean, everybody needs to tell their stories. And I told myself at the beginning it was just going to be an experiment. If it didn't feel like it was working, then I would go back to work maybe in a year. But at the end of that first year, I got approached by the folks who were going to create this contract with the Georgia Council on Developmental Disabilities about the storytelling project. And basically, they wanted to travel the state collecting stories about people with DD for advocacy purposes. They wanted one or two stories from every single legislative district, and they wanted to have a real variety of experiences, different kinds of disability. They wanted different socioeconomic class, race, urban versus rural. They wanted to be able to portray how disability, when imbricated with all of these different things, becomes such an important part of the experience, because disability is something that tends to invisibilize people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very hard experience, especially from an economic standpoint. I think a lot of times people think that the government just takes care of you, and that's really not the case.
Right.
And especially developmental disability is hard to wrap your mind around. A lot of times people tend to think of it as just certain things. You know, it's just Down syndrome, or it's just cerebral palsy, or maybe these days we tend to think a little bit about autism because that's growing in our population. But actually, a person can become quadriplegic at the age of 12, and that's considered a developmental disability because it's something that impacts your development. It's any kind of disability that comes on before the age of 22.
Wow.
So something that impacts your development before you reach adulthood.
Because in my mind, it was like mostly mental. That was what developmental disabilities kind of implied. But this is when you are in development as a person.
Exactly. So it's not just intellectual disability, because a person can have cerebral palsy and they could have, you know, full use of their intellectual capacity. And one of the things that's important about these stories is that we used to, you know, back in the day, put people in institutions. But these days we're trying very hard to help folks live in the community and have completely actualized lives as much as possible.
Yeah.
But how to do that financially is very hard to do. So one of the reasons why GCDD wanted to do this project is because that does take funding. And they are, there's this structure called a Medicaid waiver, which started actually because of a landmark Supreme Court case here in Georgia. The person that was organized around lives here in Georgia, and we actually interview her in the first episode of the podcast we're going to talk about. It's a bit of a language problem, though, because it just in terms of how we frame things, because we're calling it a waiver because the first priority for funding is still to put people in institutions.
Ah.
And so the waiver is like what keeps you out of an institution.
So this is the integrated community life. That's mm-hmm. part of the GCDD mission.
Yes. And so one of the reasons why we wanted to do the storytelling project and then as the podcast grew out of that is really to help normalize people's experience and build empathy. So, you know, one of the ideas I had, which we ended up leaving on the cutting room floor, was to really just walk people the process of, you know, how did you wake up today? Did you wake up in
right.
a community that you chose? Did you put on clothing that is, you know, an outcropping of your own personality? Did you eat food that you like? Did you get to work in a timely fashion?
Yeah.
So walking through all of the things in our lives, whether it is housing or transportation, education, the things that make our lives possible. Well, people with DD all need and want that as well. And we tend to not think in those terms.
Were you ready for the sort of emotional effect that these stories would have on you? Did you know what you were getting into?
Yes and no. One of the episodes that we do is we talk about origin stories, how everyone has an origin story. And so we sort of like compare that to superheroes, but then we say like even everyday people have an origin story
yeah.
that is their driving, you know, the impetus for the work that they do. And, I had an aunt who had a traumatic brain injury when she was 8 years old. And at the time I didn't know that that was actually the definition of a developmental disability.
Yeah.
But she's my origin story. I was her travel companion. We went all over together and she passed away quite a while ago. But, I think seeing her life, which was, amazingly integrated into the community. Like she managed to stay out of an institution because she had the resource of a family that loved her and believed in fighting for her. That helped a lot in terms of really wanting to go to the mat for these stories. At the same time, over the course of these 3 years, as I've mentioned, a lot of the storytelling that I've done, I mean, girls with, you know, who've been sex trafficked, like, clergy, like a lot of these stories after a while, there's a certain amount of grief that, is embedded in all of that. And there's a level of vicarious trauma that you tend to take on. But there's like also so much joy that's involved in these stories, you know, and that was a real tricky balance that we had to strike in both the written version of the stories and then ultimately the podcast. There's this notion that we want to steer away from what they call inspiration porn.
Okay, explain what that is
right.
With a little less disregard.
Yeah. So, you know, back in the day, they would have like what they called the poster child,
yeah.
right? An image of a person maybe in crutches or with some kind of just an inspirational story that was supposed to make you tokenize that human and want to give money to a cause. And we didn't want to just tell all happy stories that glossed over the reality of people's lives. And yet also we didn't want to make all the stories just seem awful because
right.
we want folks to want to be around people with DD, you know, like you want them to be the kind of person you want to live in your neighborhood and hang out with, go to lunch with. So it's like this real tricky balance between, it's really just about finding the reality, telling the truth.
Is that what all stories require? Is that the foundation of trying to get someone into a place where they can be a storyteller?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's interesting because in my first year as a storyteller, I went back to Virginia Tech and I worked there around the 10-year anniversary of the shootings. And then I came here and I did a show called Trigger Warning, which was about people telling stories of everyday trauma and violence. And I was kind of at a real low after all of that. Like, that was a lot of grief. And so I set out to tell a bunch of what I called happy stories. I was just like, I want some love stories. Like, tell me about being reunited with your child that you'd given up for adoption. Like, tell me some happy stories. And so I set out and I wrote all of these stories. And you know what? There are no happy stories that don't have to do with like overcoming some real hard moments, you know?
No one cares about the person who has it made and has always had it made and is doing fine.
Exactly. And that's what I do in my coaching. I tell people, like, there has to be change. If there's no change in your story, then it was just an anecdote. Like, what good story starts with everything was always okay and then moves on to, and I was always really good at it, and then ends with, and so nothing changed.
So tell me about the actual process of going to a person and getting them to tell their story.
In terms of this project, a lot of times it's just like going into their environment and noticing, you know, asking questions. And the written version of these stories, we have to mention, has to do also with photography. We had these amazing photographers that were involved in the project. And so if you go online, I'm sure that my colleagues who are in the other segments of this episode will mention the website. There are about 12 or so images from these photographers. And so when we would get there, oftentimes what we would do is sort of like split off and we'd have the photographer go with the participant and have that person, you know, give us a tour of their room or their favorite space in the house. And then I would sometimes use that time to sit down with the mom or, you know, somebody else and have that person have a little bit of time to talk privately about, like, tell me about your child's birth and diagnosis process or some of the harder parts of the story that maybe they didn't want to have to tell over and over again.
Yeah.
And then we would come together and I would have a chance to talk specifically to the person. And then, you know, there's always variety. So sometimes we'd be doing an interview with a participant who couldn't speak for themselves. So that always, you know, had its own challenge.
Yeah.
And we actually had briefing documents that would help us know some of the things about the person, which would help, you know, help me know what the questions were in the same way that I'm sure you did research today to get ready for this.
Oh, just a little bit.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's what you do. So I was able to say, hey, tell me about your, you know, participation in water therapy or, you know, Special Olympics. And that always helped to drive the conversation. But the thing is, you know, people are so beautifully unique and everyone, you know, has their own fun things to talk about. And we were in so many different parts of Georgia that always brought about, you know, parts of the story.
Yeah. So I did a StoryCorps with our mutual friend Maria.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one bit where I used the phrase confined to a wheelchair.
Mm.
And she pointed out that that is the exact wrong way to think of it. Mm-hmm. You know, a wheelchair user, it's actually freedom. It is the thing that someone uses to be, it's the tool.
Yeah.
And that felt like a, if not life-changing, then that felt like a very dramatic switch in my perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any of those switches as you were going through these stories? Did you have a moment or a series of moments where you were transformed in the way that you think about folks who are dealing with these disabilities?
So many times. One of the moments, and we actually managed to capture this and incorporate it into the podcast. As I mentioned, we got these briefing documents and, I was getting ready to go for, one of our interviews one day, and I opened up my front door and the biggest bird of prey I've ever seen in my life took off and flew across my whole field of vision with a tiny little mouse or vole or something in its talons. And I could see its tiny little legs flailing, you know, and I had read in the briefing documents for the interview that I was getting ready to go on that the young woman that we were going to interview had been recently been the victim of a crime. And for some reason that just synced up in my mind. But also after telling story after story after story about these folks that are having to fight for the resources that they need to live an actualized life, it's really unfortunate that this has become so politicized across the nation. I started to see that bird of prey not as the person that would find and victimize a person with disabilities, but as the whole system that would pick apart folks, you know. I don't feel like I'm ever going to be the same after that moment.
I'm talking to Shannon M. Turner, the founder and creative director of StoryMuse, about the GCDD Storytelling Project and its podcast, Hidden Voices. In this segment, I'm going to talk to Irene Turner, the director of the Storytelling Project and a partner at Resurgence Impact Consulting. Also, Maria Pinkleton is here. She is the GCDD Public Relations Director. Maria, do you have to say GCDD all the time?
Oftentimes, yes, but usually the first time I say it, it is the Georgia Council on Developmental Disabilities.
Yeah.
So that takes, you know, an hour, and GCDD is
right.
Like 5 seconds.
I promise I've already set that up in the intro to the show, so
there
we can just say GCDD.
You can say GCDD through the whole thing.
And Irene, you are not part of the GCDD. You're coming from another company called Resurgence Impact Consulting. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. So Resurgence is a nonprofit consulting group, and we help nonprofits from anything with project management, grant writing, strategic planning, all the kind of admin stuff you need to be effective.
And you're a licensed social worker, right?
I am. Yes.
Is that the connection? How did you get into the Storytelling Project?
So, yeah, there is a definite connection there. Right when I graduated, I worked with a teenager who had autism for about 2 years, and that really stuck with me. I developed a love for people who have developmental disabilities, and I wanted to continue that work. And I realized that working with one person or one-on-one, you had a certain sphere that you could affect. But what I've always been passionate about is working on a state legislative level where that sphere is so much bigger and you can affect many more people.
Like, I know a lot of people understand the process of trying to change, trying to change yourself or trying to connect with people. But when you're actually working with the folks who are writing laws, what's the change in that process of trying to affect change?
You're working with relationships more. So you have to know what motivates legislators and what's going to kind of break through all the noise. Because when they're in session, they have thousands of bills coming through. So you have to understand and perceive what's going to break through that to reach them, and then what's going to fit to move the whole thing forward.
And Maria, that's kind of what GCDD
Yes.
does all the time,
yes.
right?
So we have a policy team that annually is at the Capitol pretty much all of session, looking at bills that relate or impact Georgians with developmental disabilities and their families. So we have any number of bills that will come through that discuss educational funding, special education funding, transportation. Transportation is usually a challenge for people that have an intellectual or developmental disability. And so they are down there making the relationships happen, making these Georgians known. A big part of the storytelling project was putting a name and a face and a person to the number.
Have you ever done a storytelling project before or something even related to it?
I have not. And it is something that actually fell into my lap. I started at GCDD in August of 2017. And at that time, our council, who is kind of like our advisory board, made up of Georgians that are family members, experts in the field, had approved budget for a storytelling project that our policy department had proposed. And they said, hey, Maria, here's a gift. And so I was like, whoa, that's a lot of stories. That's a lot of stories you need. What are we going to do with them? And so the immediate need was to get the stories. And we sent out an RFP, and L'Arche, which is the governing kind of body of Irene and the rest of the team and Shannon, pitched their plan to have these photographers, these storytellers make this approach, and they are fabulous. We granted them the project.
Some people might not know what an RFP is.
Request for Proposals.
Right.
So it was an announcement stating we are looking for someone to come tour the state of Georgia, take amazing photographs, capture amazing stories, and send them to us. So that we had several people approach us and not really be as on the mark as the L'Arche team was. They knew it was going to take a lot of logistics. Georgia's a big state. And we were looking for you to find someone who was willing to share their story in 56 Senate districts. That's a lot. So they were up to the challenge, and they were just running with it. I've been amazed by their work. And along the way, they've like, hey, we had this great story here, and this happened here. And so at the end of that first year, we had all of these stories and began using them in some of our legislative handouts. We do an event called Advocacy Days, where we actually invite people with developmental and intellectual disabilities in to go over and meet their elected officials. They may not know who they are. They find out who they are that day. And so we would take a couple of the story snippets, include them in some of the handouts. So it was that first intro into putting a person's face with this story. And this is how I really need home and community-based services. This is how I really need inclusive post-secondary education opportunities. So it is kind of snowballed from there.
Yeah. So, Irene, when Maria said that they were up for the challenges, she looked right at you. What were the challenges? What were the things that, what did you have to manage in doing this project?
56 Senate districts, but we collected 75 stories, and that was in the first year of the project. So in 12 months, we did outreach, found located people, organized trips. I don't know how many trips we had in 2018, maybe 10 trips where we sent the team around the state to interview people, writing the stories, editing the photographs, putting it all together, and then putting them in packages. So I think we had an average of 6 to 7 stories a month that we were doing like this, all on a budget too. So it's not just unlimited when it happens, but everything has to be thought of through beforehand and massive spreadsheets.
Was there any piece of it that for you was the most appealing challenge, or the thing that you now feel like, oh, well, now I know how to do this now that I've done this project?
Yeah, I think outreach. Right when we got the grant and the team found out, we were so excited. But then there was this moment where everyone kind of looked at each other and we were like, okay, now we have to do this. So for me, because part of my main role was organizing and keeping the project going, but also finding people to be in the storytelling project, outreach was a little daunting, especially around the state and in areas I had never been to. I grew up in Georgia, but obviously don't know everywhere. I
imagine it's a very fragile kind of thing to say, hey, we need people who have developmental disabilities to tell us stories about things that are hard. Like, what's the actual language there? What's the way that you connect with folks? And I give this to both of you as a question.
Yeah. Well, I think something that I found is that people are eager to tell their stories, especially when they live outside of a metropolitan area and no one is maybe coming out there and interested in how they're living and what's going on with their lives. So most people I've found have been eager to be involved in the project and want to connect with other people who have told their stories in the project. So yeah, I mean, the storytelling project is a platform for people to have a say in how their lives, like what's available in their lives through the state and through funding. So it's an exciting project to be involved in.
And I will say that many of the families, not all, but many, as a family that have a member with a developmental or intellectual disability, often feel isolated, regardless of their actual region that they live in or population of that region. They can often feel isolated because they may not know any other families like them.
Yeah.
They may feel unheard because of lack of resources in their school that should provide them, or in their community, their employment offices that should provide them. So for them to have someone approach them and say, hey, we'd like to talk to you, like to collect some photos and some stories from you, and we will be using them, our initial intent, to present to legislators. So your legislator from your District 12, who is so-and-so, can see, this is one of my constituents, their family votes, they vote. This, the things that go on in our region are very important to them and can really impact them if they go one way or another. This person has a voice. And so to really actually be seen and be heard and be asked for your input, your story, just to share to this higher power, right, of elected official, is really something that I think a lot of people were fully on board with. And each story, towards the end, once the person is interviewed, they are asked, if you could talk to your elected official, what would you say to them?
So was a podcast always part of the plan? Because this idea of speaking to people, of communicating the stories, it seems ready-made. So when did a podcast become an idea of how you would use the stories?
Yeah, so at the end of our first year in 2018, the team had a series of conversations, and we knew we had this bank of stories at that time. It was 75. And we were like, okay, how can we reach more people? Maybe people who don't like visually perceive stories, maybe through radio or through podcasts.
Yeah.
And Shannon, she proposed the podcast, and she was like, I think this is going to be a good way to take the project. I mean, podcasts and film, I think, are the next two frontiers that we're engaging with. And a lot of people take in media that way. So
what were the ways that the stories were being told or presented before that? Or
so
how have you done it so far?
Currently, they are on our website at gcdd.org. They were also separated by district, and five stories each were inserted into publications like the old Parade magazine. I'm sure I'm totally aging myself, but like newspaper, print, insert.
I know exactly what you're talking
and
about.
And they were put into the Lawrenceville Daily Post, Rome News Tribune, Athens Banner Herald / Oconee Leader, Bainbridge Post Searchlight, and the Forsyth News, Blue Ridge News Observer. So we chose key legislative districts where some of the more power players down at the Capitol live, and put it in those papers so that, and those people, we have been told, tried and true, read their their actual newspaper.
Yeah, so you do this for a living. You know the actual answer. Newspapers, where are they still important? Because for a lot of people, the big story is, oh yeah, we're done. Print media is over and we're all internet.
I was shocked when our policy team said they bring their local newspapers with them. When it's advocacy day or take your legislator to work day, they are excited about their cover photo of Bainbridge Post with this person at their job and that legislator. They read them. And so do their constituents.
Yeah.
We're just trying to reach as many people as possible. So, I mean, we have the podcasts, the newspapers. We also made a documentary film this year.
What's next? How does this proceed?
So this year we collected 25 more stories. So we have a total of 100 stories. And we took a deep dive this year with those stories. Whereas last year, the first year, we had one touch point with a person and just did one interview. Sent the photographer and the storyteller out. This year, we sent the team out multiple times. So we wanted to kind of dig in a bit into the person's life and be with them, like at a special event or at a weekly dance class, as well as doing the interview. So now we're in the process around this time of developing out next year's project and what the iteration will be in 2020. And it's been exciting to do that. I've been talking with a lot of people and I've gone to a couple of conferences to see kind of how people are engaging around storytelling and what's really grabbing people.
Do you want to tease any ideas or is it still?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of exciting ideas are interactive installations of the project.
Oh, nice.
So we have this bank of 100 stories now, and how can we engage with the public and policy and lawmakers? And how those stories can speak back and forth across those lines.
I look forward to seeing that stuff. That sounds great. I've been speaking in this segment with Irene Turner, the director of the Storytelling Project, and Maria Pinkleton, the public relations director for GCDD. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you.
This is Ira Glass of This American Life, and you're listening to WREK Atlanta. Music you don't hear on the radio, on the radio.
Welcome back to the North Avenue Lounge. On this segment, I'm going to speak to Michelle Corey, the CEO and founder of Frequency Media, a podcast production company, and also Irene Turner, the director of the GCDD Storytelling Project, has stayed from the last segment. Welcome back, Irene.
Thank you.
And welcome, Michelle.
Well, thank you.
So we talked a little bit about the Hidden Voices podcast, like why that came out of the work you all were doing. But now let's talk about what happens when a group that is concentrating on public policy and advocacy decides they're going to make a podcast. So, Irene, what was the first step when you said, we're going to do this? This is a real thing that's going to happen in the world.
Yeah. So after we got the approval and funding, of course, then Shannon somehow was connected with Michelle and Frequency.
Yeah, I had met her at a storytelling night called Carapace here in Atlanta.
Yeah, so we met, we had a series of conversations, and we decided to move forward together. So then we started building out the project, and Michelle, from the get-go, just had all the materials we needed, all the guidance and framework that we needed. Because I think Shannon has experience in radio, but neither of us have any podcast experience. So we really needed Michelle to help us and guide us through that process.
So Michelle, what is Frequency?
Frequency is a podcast production company. So we really we meet podcasters wherever they are in their podcaster's journey is like what we like to say. And that basically means that, for instance, with GCDD, it was with a production package that made it accessible for them to have a very high quality show. The same quality that we bring to a client like Coca-Cola, where we do a full service approach with them. So we really are, we're first of its kind in that we offer everything from a blog full of free resources all the way up to full service podcast production.
When did this idea come to you for Frequency?
When I saw so many people doing it wrong. I mean, it's just, you know, I'm an independent podcaster. I started the Cultured Podcast 2 years ago now, and I did it by myself, and I taught myself how to edit. And that's what a lot of people do when they want to start a podcast, is they dive in headfirst and DIY it. And that's what's the beauty about podcasting, is that you can do that. But I have a history with sound, and I had a short stint in the music industry and used to read music and was a singer. So it was a part of my bones to work with sound. But what I kept seeing was, as I got deeper into podcasting and worked with other podcasters to help build their websites and design their brands, I kept seeing these other production companies that came from different backgrounds and weren't necessarily well-versed in podcast production, who were taking these people's very hard-earned dollars and not honoring them the way that I thought they should be honored. So after a lot of research, market research and thought, I came up with this new business model where I would do this very bold thing and try to serve every kind of podcaster with high quality and intentional production.
And how did the Hidden Voices pitch compare to other, I guess, requests for help that you've gotten?
Well, it was a natural fit, honestly. It was something where, you know, one of our core values at Frequency is alignment. And we will only work with those clients that align with our values and align with what we're trying to do in the world, which is heal and enlighten and uplift through sound. So when GCDD and Frequency started having our conversations, it was pretty immediately clear that this was going to be a powerful and united partnership, and the kind of stories that we're trying to tell as Frequency and bring into the world. So it was, frankly, very seamless. It was an easy yes all around for all of us.
So the show concept was exactly the kind of thing you want to do. What's the first, like, practical thing that you have to consider when you're going to start a podcast?
I love that question, because we come from a place of strategy first. So for us, it was very much about, like, how are we going to tell this story? What is the content strategy here? So oftentimes, even when we have someone come to us and say, hey, I'm looking for a production package and this is my idea, sometimes they'll actually throw a content strategy package onto that. And what that does is it brings us on as the ideators. So we put together like 20-page research reports with comparative research, and we show you this is the kind of show that that client should have, or that that person holding that vision should have, based on deep research. So our first step is to have a hypothesis with our partner, and then to either prove or invalidate that hypothesis. And we actually use this terminology in our team. And then once we present what we think our strong recommendation is for that show idea or vision, usually up until this point, every client has been like, yes, this is dead on, because it merges with whatever their goals and resources are. And so it's very, very tailored. And then we go into the production phase with those packages. In this case, for instance, with GCDD, where we then say, okay, it's time to start production. And we like to start that way with content strategy, and that intentionality is core to our values. We like to start that way with every kind of client that we have, whether that client is starting with a giga package or is full service.
When someone comes with the show idea, you know, the first thing you do is you figure out what is the best kind of show for you to accomplish what you've set out to do. And so with Hidden Voices, that's the getting the voices out there, getting the stories out there.
Yeah, and that was very much with GCDD. There are these incredible entities behind this project. So they made it easy for us. You know, in this case, GCDD came to us and was like, this is the kind of show that we want to have. And we were more consultative in that we helped guide and say, okay, this is going to be a lot to squeeze into one episode, or, hey, have you thought about maybe approaching it like this? But they came to us with this really beautiful vision, and we knew that was, and that's rarely the case.
Yeah. Did you play with some formats, like, did you consider 11 radio style Hidden Voices, or, an anchored, like a magazine style?
We actually have a magazine style for one of our other clients, and that's it's called the 2X CEO, that podcast. And that's, we chose that because their audience are the very busy female CEOs and founders. And I think for this, you really want to sink into these stories and you want to feel them. And for me, Hidden Voices is more like the podcast Modern Love, which is one of my favorite podcasts, where I don't just play Modern Love at any moment. I sit with a cup of coffee in my most comfortable chair and I sink into the story.
Yeah, it's an LP experience as opposed to a radio experience.
It's the White Album.
Yeah.
You know?
So what were the production considerations then, after you've got the format and you're looking at, now we're going to start? What's the next step?
The next step is to do the research. So depending on the format of the show, it's either interview prep research, or it's also writing the script. And so in this case, with Hidden Voices, we just have this phenomenally talented host and writer, Shannon. And so we're able to really be more consultative on that end as well, where she and Irene collaborate on writing the script, and then we come in, and by we I mean our incredibly talented producer Ina Garkusha has been the point on this project, and she has been right there. She's become an extension of the team, which is how we like to handle it. And so Ina will go over the scripts with Irene and Shannon and chime in and help to really get it to a place where it's final. And then Shannon goes into the studio with that script in hand and records it, records the interviews. We have a beautiful studio environment here in East Atlanta Village, and those partners are incredible with us, and that's sort of our second home. And so that's the easy part for us. That's the fun part, right, is getting into that studio and making sure all the levels are pristine. Our sound engineers are phenomenal. And then we take that raw audio and we go into post-production.
Yeah.
And that's where we, Frequency, takes the ball and runs with it and makes sure that those narratives come to life in a way that is tight, that is concise, that is clean, and that lives up to the initial vision as set by the entire team.
Irene, what does it feel like to listen to an edited episode of the podcast, a produced and edited episode?
Wow, it's amazing. I remember the first podcast I listened to, the first cut, I went for a walk around my neighborhood and I ended up sitting on a tree stump and listening to it. And I had to pause it several times because I would get overwhelmed just hearing all this work and being at the interviews and going through the script and working with Ina and then being in studio and doing the whole process. When you hear it for the first time, it can be overwhelming.
Yeah. Had you been a podcast listener before that?
Yeah, I've listened to some podcasts. I wouldn't say that I'm like an avid podcast consumer, but I do listen to podcasts.
What was it like to get a peek into the behind the scenes, the production of this medium?
Yeah, it's so much fun. It's so much fun. Yeah.
I may be biased, but it's a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun. I mean, it starts in conversations and then it moves into kind of spreadsheet mode and then document mode, and the whole process is intriguing and fun, and being able to take conversations we have with our story participants and then bring them to life together in a recording is great.
Michelle, what's your favorite part of the whole process?
Oh my gosh. I have a lot of favorite parts, and I think as a CEO founder, I should, because I have to do a lot. I would say my favorite part is, okay, if my ego's talking, when we finally get to launch and share all of this work with the world. So I'm very excited, like the entire team, those who have worked on this project, like Ina or Peter, who has been QCing episodes. I QC every episode and provide deep input. But then also we have these weekly calls where we share with the whole team what we're doing. So the entire team.
What is QC? For some of our listeners?
Quality check. So quality control or quality check.
And that's listening to make sure no one's left in a weird sound, right?
Or yes. Or, because usually that's the easiest part, is like these editors, the people cutting the episodes, the easy thing is to not leave in weird sounds. The harder thing is to get the narrative just right. So usually I'm the one doing quality checks for not only the sound, but also, and most importantly, the narrative.
Yeah. So do you feel like, do podcasts still have that kind of Wild West freedom that they used to?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It
does seem like corporatization is coming, you know, that we're going to have the networks eventually. You know, there's going to be the NBC, CBS, ABC of podcasts. Do you think we'll still be able to live in that indie rock place for podcasts?
Yeah. And I have mixed feelings about it because mixed feelings about the indie rock because I think, no, I don't. I think it's all going to exist very much like we've seen with online video. So online video, you have these incredible productions with lots of team members and big budgets, but you still have the grassroots. And so I think what's beautiful about podcasting is you really can just pick up, you know, the Anchor app, for instance, record your voice and publish it within minutes. And so it's very accessible in that way. But with more content comes more our listeners are becoming more attuned to higher quality sound and better narratives. So sitting around a mic with your buddies drinking a beer and talking about whatever just isn't interesting anymore compared to the onrush of other shows. And so, you know, we are by no means oversaturated in the podcasting space. By no means. We're like not even at 750,000 podcasts. You know what I mean? So like compare that to TV shows, books, magazine articles. It's nothing. So but there is now a more sophisticated listener. And so what we're seeing is intentionality matters. And so that's why our partners come to us, because they want a high quality show that is accessible to them and affordable to them, but in a way that is intentional, that is well thought out, so that it really does do what they're investing their time and efforts into, their resources. So the networks already exist. And the big productions already exist, and the Wild West is still there.
This is the North Avenue Lounge. I'm talking to Michelle Corey, CEO and founder of Frequency Media, and Irene Turner, the director of the Storytelling Project. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
This season on Hidden Voices, we travel the state of Georgia, uncovering the stories of people with developmental disabilities, their lives, their passions, their heartaches, and their triumphs. We'll hear about the landmark Supreme Court case which started here in Georgia and set the precedent for how we treat people with developmental disabilities.
A waiver is actually waiving a person's funding not to be in an institution. The funding first goes for institutional settings still today.
We'll learn about the importance of self-advocacy.
You may think I'm just another pretty face, but I am going to make a real difference for people with disabilities.
We'll hear how frustrating it can be to be the family member of someone trying to navigate the system, and when they fight for the support they need.
There is an army of experts in this state. And they are mamas, and they are daddies, and they are grandmamas, and other supporters who have lived this life. They know Medicaid policy front, back, up, down, inside, and out. Why aren't we tapping into that expertise?
We'll follow stories about the search for full inclusion.
Tyree, what do you want people to know about your life?
I am a good guy, and I will help anybody, but I need an opportunity.
He say he's a good guy. He just needs the opportunity, you know, and he'll help anybody.
And hear what it feels like to be living in a completely different world.
There's two worlds, and that is a community and a disability world. And I believe those two have a strong connection. I believe those two need to come together and make a better change for good, because we are just like you.
We are going to meet some amazing people and hear incredible stories along the way. So tune in to Hidden Voices, premiering October 30th on all streaming platforms. For more information, go to the Georgia Council on Developmental Disabilities website at gcdd.org.
You just heard the promo for the podcast Hidden Voices, coming soon, involving the work of my friend and co-host Shannon M. Turner, who is back to finish off this episode. What was it like to have this work that you've been doing, you know, transformed into the podcast?
As soon as I got hired to do the storytelling project, I started seeing it as a podcast.
Yeah.
I could feel the energy that the stories were going to be that. But then not long after that, as we were doing more of the writing, I started tracking these trends across the stories. And so the storytelling project is organized around one story at a time. And that's great for what it is, because it is humanizing people. And those stories are being walked right into legislators' offices, you know, so that they can say, look, this is your constituent. Please make better decisions on their behalf. Like, please stop voting against Medicaid waivers. But at the same time, I think there's such power in when I was seeing, like, the high school transition is such a problematic time for people. Housing is such a, you know, issue. And then there's, like, just really cool stuff, like adaptive technology and service animals, things that, you know, if you can group some of these stories together, then it will have a different kind of impact. And it felt like podcast was a really powerful tool to do that. And so at the end of that first year of the storytelling project, they came back to me and said, we want you to write for us a second year. And I was like, sure. Yeah, I'm happy to keep writing for you. Here's what I really want to do.
Yeah.
I think this is a podcast. And so they bought it. And I right away, I was able to propose what a first season would look like in terms of these 7 episodes. And that was, I think, really helpful in terms of getting them on board. Because when I was able to organize the episodes so quickly and say, and these are the participants that would be in it, they were like, oh, well, that sounds easy.
So we heard from Michelle Corey in a previous segment. How much of the podcast, now that it's complete, how much does it sound like your first mental listen when you were imagining the podcast?
Oh, it's even better. I mean, bringing Frequency on board really upped the game, because they're such a professional organization. And I mean, all of my, you know, Ira Glass, you know, dreamy, schemey ideas are just, it's amazing to, and honestly, so we got the promo last week, and I was able to play it when I was with my mom and grandmother. And my mom literally was like, is that your voice? I can't believe it, that you sound so professional. And like, my grandmother didn't, like, we hardly could even convince her that it was my voice that she was listening to.
So how does each podcast episode work?
Basically, especially in the first few episodes, I come on and I often tell a personal story sort of as an opportunity to stand as a bridge between our general audience and launching into the topic that day. And then we have 2 or 3 interviews that help to build the story. And then we kind of come out with the closing thought. And then our final episode is, we call it Where We're At. It's a hard look, a 360 review of all of these topics. And we take two stories and compare them to each other, which was an interesting thing to do, because you don't want to say, well, one person has all the things and another person doesn't have all the things, and that's because of race, or that's because of where they live in the state, or that's, you know, you don't want to be divisive about it. But I think sometimes at the end of the day, you do, you know, if you're trying to be real, then you got to be real.
What was it like to work with a bigger organization with multiple partners and kind of be one of many building a story, building a podcast?
Oh, well, you know, it's got its benefits and its drawbacks for sure. You know, the resources that were brought to bear were amazing, especially to be able to crisscross the state and collect these stories. And I mean, you know, from the work that you do, to be able to have a podcast be completely commercial free,
yeah,
fully funded, is a very rare thing.
It is. And sometimes it kind of lets you, being able to do whatever you want sometimes changes your sense of what you're doing. So I think maybe another way to ask my question is, like, what did you learn from having constraints?
They definitely helped me up my game in terms of thinking about how to tell a story. And especially because I definitely did not always do whatever I wanted. and that was fine. That was good because, you know, this is not my story to tell. You know, I was just holding the vessel. And there's a lot of really important things to think about in terms of people with disabilities. And, you know, like I said, the language that we use, and you mentioned it as well. I think language is so powerful, and it's evolved over time, and it sort of it reifies our reality. So we had to really think about how we wanted to tell these stories in order to continue to manifest our present and the future that we want around this, you know, this particular reality.
So tell me about the episodes we're going to hear next week.
We're going to preview episodes 1 and 2. Episode 1, we actually take a look at that groundbreaking Supreme Court case that started here in Georgia. We actually have some folks who were in and around that case from the Atlanta Legal Aid and ARC Georgia. And we have the woman who was a part of the case was named after. And we also looked a little bit backward at the Americans with Disabilities Act as the original framing that we built from. And we compare that actually to Brown versus Board of Education, because I think that the way that Brown versus Board of Education was an initial precedent, but it didn't immediately change everything. Like, people had to go to the mat over and over and over again. And same thing with both the ADA and Olmstead, which is this case that we're talking about. Like, the decision was made, but then people did not start taking action until folks had to show up and drag their wheelchairs up the, you know, up the court steps in order to really make change start to happen. And then in episode 2, we have that really fun episode I was telling you about with service animals and adaptive technology, which is phenomenal. One of my favorite stories in the whole project is in that one.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Do these episodes each have a title? Or are they episode 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5? You know?
Yeah, I think the definitely we sort of just at least refer to them as, you know, Episode 2 is about service animals and adaptive technology.
The one with service animals?
Yeah, exactly.
Is that the name of
these podcasts? Yeah.
Well, Shannon, thanks for coming in and telling us about the new project. I'm looking forward to playing the podcast next week.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, man. I mean, I'll support you, even if it's, you know, helping somebody else. My guest today, among others, was Shannon M. Turner, the founder and creative director of Story Muse and my co-host on the North Avenue Lounge. Thanks for coming, Shannon.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you for tuning in to the North Avenue Lounge. My guests today were Irene Turner of Resurgence Impact Consulting, Maria Pinkleton of the Georgia Council on Developmental Disabilities, Michelle Corey of Frequency Media, and Shannon M. Turner of Story Muse, all talking about GCDD and the Hidden Voices podcast. Find out more about the GCDD and its storytelling project at story-collection.gcdd.org. You can hear this show again and many others at northavenuelounge.com. Next week, we preview the Hidden Voices podcast right here on the North Avenue Lounge on WREK Atlanta. We'll be right back.